supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Most stars make their way across the universe with a solar partner, or two, or more. But perhaps even the singles, our sun included, are wandering in search of their lost twins. Let's go searching with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, this calls for some potential rethinking. I thought our sun was once and always a solitary explorer.
Well, actually, Dave, if you take a look at the night sky, one of the things you'll find is, as you said, that most of the stars in the sky are multiples of some type, binary stars, meaning two, or some multiple kind of star system going all the way up to something as complicated as a globular cluster where you might find 100,000 stars all clustered together. So if that is the case, what is the mechanism for the birth of a single star? And in trying to answer this question, astronomers have come to recognize that there's a much greater possibility that these single stars do indeed start off with siblings, and somehow they become separated from their siblings during their development and then become individual stars on their own. In fact, we can even look at our own star, our sun, and say that at some point in its very early history, it too probably had a sibling that's no longer with us, but wandering somewhere around the Milky Way galaxy.
Is there anything akin to solar DNA analysis whereby we might, in theory, identify our twin or twins?
Boy, that's a really great question. And yes, you could possibly try to do that, but the question would be, how do we specifically identify this particular star as being the twin to ours? We can certainly identify that stars seem to have a similar chemistry, but the idea that there's an exact DNA match showing that they are exactly alike might be much closer to the idea of fraternal twins than identical twins.
Well, now let's move on to what's known about the formation of planets, and specifically, let's tackle the order of our eight planets. Did Mercury come first, and then Venus and Earth, etc.?
You might think it had come that way since the solar system is ordered that way, but it seems to have much more to do with how the early solar system began to differentiate itself more so than anything else. And what researchers have discovered is that it looks like the king of our planets, the significant gas giant, Jupiter, probably came along first. And in doing so, coming along first, it took up so much more material. Its formation seems to have been driving some of that differentiation between different regions of the solar system.
Is Jupiter initially composed of a piece of the sun that was sent out?
Well, the better way to think of how the planets form in our solar system is that you have this great mixture of all sorts of material. Typically, when we talk about stars, we talk about them being almost 100% hydrogen with some helium mixed in. But if you look at the composition of the nebula from which the stars are actually created, all the elements of the periodic table are in there. So all those heavier elements then go into becoming and making up the rest of the planets of the solar system.
So now let's come closer. How did the rocky planets, ours included, form?
Well, if you look at the kinds of materials we're talking about as we differentiate the solar system, we find that we have all the heavier stuff in close to the star and the lighter stuff further out from the star. So the heavier stuff hangs in closer because it takes more energy to push the heavier stuff out. We end up with the heavier stuff in close to the star that makes up the rocky planets. And then the gas giant planets further out, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, that's made up of all the lighter stuff.
Let's shed light on the longest amount of daylight of the year coming up this Wednesday.
You're right. Summer solstice starts at 12:24 a.m. This will be the day in which we have 15 hours of daylight, 15 hours of daylight. The sun rises in the morning at 5:31. It sets in the evening at 8:33. Sunrise has been hanging around 5:31 in the morning for about a week now, but we slipped a few seconds on that today. However, sunset is dwelling at 8:33 until July 4th, and then we start to lose daylight on that end of the day also.
So wait a minute, summer's just starting.
You could try to say that summer is just starting, but it depends how you want to divide it out. If you go by the equinoxes and the solstices, well, sure, it turns out that This Wednesday is the first day of what we call summer, but we've been working our way to gaining more time for the number of hours of daylight since the first day of spring, and we've reached the pinnacle of that, and so now we're going to start to drop off. And it's all about where the Earth is in its orbit around the sun. So that's the real piece here that's driving everything. The Earth arrives at this particular position on Wednesday morning at 12:24 in the morning. So we identify the summer solstice as just being a point in time where the Earth reaches this particular position in its orbit around the sun, and it continues on its orbit around the sun. But for us, we now dwell in this lovely time of year, but we should always keep in mind that the times, they are a-changing, and we will begin to see the change in the number of hours of daylight as we move on through July and certainly into August.
When the sky finally darkens, what's available to be seen this week?
We've now reached the point in our observing season, and it just happens to come at the perfect time of year, in which we can see both Jupiter and Saturn in the evening sky at reasonable times. So by 10 p.m. in the evening, Jupiter is now over in the southwestern portion of the sky, but Saturn is now high enough in the eastern sky that we can see it without much difficulty at all. It's a perfect time for folks to come to the Franklin Institute, where this Thursday, our night skies at the observatory program will allow them to get a great view of both of these planets in the same night. If you happen to be up in the very early morning hours, 4:45 a.m. tomorrow, you'll find the thin, waning crescent moon and Venus are together just before sunrise over on the eastern side of the sky. So you can catch all of these great sights if you're willing to lose a few hours of sleep here and there.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.